good evening. There's no one here. I'm calling to order the Thursday, December 4th, 2025 Shoreland Planning Commission meeting. I'll actually speak with words that make sense now. Carla, can you do a roll call?
Yes, Chair Brunson.
I'm here.
Commissioner Cabe.
Here.
Commissioner Fry.
Here.
Commissioner Lynn.
Here.
Vice Chair Mosier.
Here.
And Commissioner Povich is not absent, or not present, and Commissioner Hadley is absent with notice. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Approval of the agenda. Yes. Approval of last meeting's meeting minutes. Thumbs up. Excellent. Do we have any public comment this evening?
There is no public comment this evening.
Excellent. Just because I am a little ridiculous and said shore lane instead of shoreline earlier. All right, study items. We are here to talk about the light rail subarea plans. Kate, take it away.
All right. I'm Kate Lee. I'm a senior planner with our Planning and Community Development Department, here to present this item tonight. So in this presentation, I'll give an overview of the history of the light rail station area planning and outline the goals for the plan update. Tonight, the commission will have an opportunity to ask questions about the current plans and then give direction on the work that we'll be undergoing in the coming year. You might recognize some of the folks in this photo. So this slide just goes over the agenda for the presentation. We'll introduce the light rail subarea plans, the environmental review that took place as part of that effort, explain the role of something called a planned action, give an overview of the plans update, provide the expected project schedule, and ask the commission to provide feedback on what comes next. This was at, I think, one of our planning department retreats. So, yeah, great photo. So this slide shows the geographic location of each station area within the city. The colors displayed on the maps relate to the existing land use of each parcel. The 185th station subarea extends up to the north, up to North 195th Street, and south to North 175th Street. It goes west along North 185th Street to Aurora Avenue North, and then east to the North City commercial area. The 145th station subarea extends mainly up to North 155th Street, with part of it extending as far north as the Ridgecrest neighborhood along 5th Avenue Northeast. It goes south to the city boundary at North 145th Street, west to Meridian Avenue North, and east to 15th Avenue Northeast. So in 2015 and 2016, the city adopted each subarea plan along with changes to the comprehensive plan, the comprehensive plan land use map, the zoning map, and the development code. In addition, the city adopted planned action area ordinances to streamline environmental review for future development in these two areas. Each plan includes details on the extensive community engagement process, describes the existing conditions and future market forecasts, the long-term vision, the benefits of the plan, and the incremental implementation strategy over time. The long-term vision for both station areas are to create livable communities where walking, biking, and transit are the best choice for most trips. And this is the visioning language taken from the plans. Over time, the subareas will transform into vibrant, transit-oriented villages with a variety of housing choices and neighborhood-supporting commercial connected by a network of pedestrian and bicycle facilities, parks and open spaces, and other public amenities. Over time, private and public investment will enhance the village setting, creating a walkable, safe, healthy, and livable place. People will be able to easily walk and bicycle to and from the light rail station, shopping, parks, schools, and other community locations from their homes. Neighborhood-oriented businesses and services will emerge as the village grows, along with places for civic celebrations, social gatherings, and public art. Eventually, the transit-oriented villages will become some of the most desirable places to live in Shoreline. So the Washington State Environmental Policy Act, or SEPA, it requires the evaluation of environmental impacts for proposed development and for plans and regulations that enable that development, like these sub-area plans. So prior to the adoption of each of these plans, the city completed environmental analysis for each station. When a proposal or a plan may result in large impacts, SEPA requires what's called an environmental impact statement, or an EIS. The EIS identifies environmental conditions, growth alternatives, potential impacts, and measures to reduce or mitigate any significant impacts. So this table shown on the slide shows the topics and alternatives that were studied in each environmental impact statement, as well as the selected growth threshold and the planned action for each station area. So essentially, we look at a certain amount of growth, both in housing units and jobs, and then we contemplate the impacts of that and outline any mitigation that's needed. You can see that through 2035, the environmental analysis planned for up to 2,214 housing units in the 145th area and 2,190 housing units in the 185th area. So as previously mentioned briefly, a planned action is an environmental review tool that prepares upfront environmental analysis within a defined geographic area and then adopts growth thresholds in its planned action ordinance. The city did this for both station areas. So if proposed development projects come in now for review and they're consistent with that planned action ordinance, and are within the adopted growth threshold, so they're staying under the total number of units that we've contemplated in the environmental analysis, then they don't need to undergo that project level SEPA review. And so that means they're not subject to SEPA appeals, which can help streamline development. This table shows the growth thresholds and trends for each station area. The planned actions were written with about 20 years of growth in mind. So we're about 10 years into those planned actions, and we're more than halfway through that anticipated growth. The 148th Street station has less than a quarter of the housing units left in the planned action threshold, while the 185th station has about a third of the housing units left. To support continued growth in the sub-areas, the city needs to review and supplement the original environmental impact statements to reflect increased development capacity and make sure that the impacts from the growth are adequately mitigated. So if these planned action ordinances are not updated and that capacity is exhausted, then environmental review occurs on a project-by-project basis under SEPA instead of as a cumulative impact analysis. So to continue to support growth in the sub-areas, City Council authorized approval of a contract to update the station area planned action ordinances. This was in November of last year, November of 2024. And that contract consists of two phases. The first phase was to review background materials to identify options for updating the planned action environmental impact statements, include a recommendation on the most appropriate SEPA document moving forward. This phase also more fully defines or would define the scope of phase two, which would vary based on that recommendation for the environmental analysis. And then phase two is to implement the recommendations of phase one, which may include a planned action EIS addendum or supplemental EIS. These are all kind of nuanced terms to mean we need to do something to update our environmental analysis and be in compliance with state regulations if we want to continue to facilitate growth in the station areas. Phase one concluded in May 30th of this year and included a work plan and schedule, sub-area plan review and development capacity analysis by our consultant, public engagement strategy and SEPA options, and a recommendation for moving forward. As part of this, we also identified connectivity as an issue that we needed some more planning around. And to do this, planning requires updates of the sub-area plans themselves, not just an update of the planned action ordinances. So to this issue about connectivity, both station areas include long blocks, dead-end streets, and a broken street grid with missing segments. Obviously, running right through both station areas is I-5. The existing 145th and 185th station sub-area plans acknowledge the connectivity challenges and include some high-level policies that encourage developers to incorporate non-motorized facilities as they redevelop property. However, the plans don't provide specific or detailed direction on the implementation piece of how to actually get that. So as a result, redevelopment has occurred without a cohesive network, resulting in missed opportunities over the last 10 years to support that overall vision of a vibrant, walkable, bikeable, and transit-supportive station area. So this lack of connectivity, it's a large barrier in achieving the sub-area plan visions for an urban village where people can easily walk and bike to and from the light rail station and to other locations like shopping, parks, schools, to and from their homes. We've seen this in the last 10 years as some sites redevelop and lack connection beyond the individual site. We do have a vision for what we want, but we need to do some more planning work to actually achieve that vision. In addition to this issue with not achieving the vision of the urban villages, we're also facing a very practical problem, something we all produce but don't want to look at, which is garbage or trash. Solid waste pickup and delivery truck access is an issue because the solid waste bins can't be staged in the street for pickup. So trucks need to come on site to pick up that garbage. But that uses up land that could otherwise be used for housing, commercial space, open space, or other amenities. Generally speaking, older cities don't have this problem because they have an alley system that allows them to put all of that back of house or ugly stuff in the alleys, like garbage bins, electrical poles, things like that. So it enables the sidewalk along the street edge to be comfortable, safe, and visually pleasing. We don't have that advantage in our suburban setting. You know, we inherited what we have from unincorporated county area, and so we have to create it, which takes time and resources. So it starts with planning like this and getting new concepts and the updated plans, then getting code language and the development code to implement the plan that will have the teeth to get what we want. And it may include some creative financial mechanisms to achieve it on the city's end and or just relying on private redevelopment to achieve it. So that's part of what we're looking at is how to get there. There is a current code provision that helped get some connectivity. So on this slide, we show an aerial image of two adjacent multifamily sites that are in the 145th station area. This is on 145th, First Avenue Northeast, and 147th. And so there is a shared use path that connects from 145th going north to 147th, and it's between the line and Verdant. And so that is one connection point we were able to get. That code provision says that if you have a piece of property on two parallel public rights of way where the nearest connection point is at least 250 linear feet, then you have to provide this connection. But there's an easy out because if a symbol property falls below that 250-foot threshold, then there's no code requirement. The code requirement also doesn't recognize that we might want different connection types in different places. So pedestrian-only, maybe pedestrian and bike, or maybe even a motorized facility to service garbage and truck deliveries and things like that. So there's another issue that we'll be putting some more analysis into in the sub-area plan update. At the June 2nd, 2025 City Council meeting, the comprehensive plan amendment docket included the connectivity work and direction from Council to evaluate the area north of Northeast 185th Street between 1st and 5th Avenues Northeast for a zoning overlay that provides greater flexibility for non-residential land uses. This area encompasses the Shoreline Center site as well as other privately owned properties. The goal of the overlay would be to allow flexibility for certain types of land uses that may want to co-locate in this area, such as other sports, entertainment, or hotel uses. So this concept will be evaluated in the 185th sub-area plan update and part of the SEPA analysis to look at what kind of impacts we might need to anticipate or mitigate for with any kind of additional land uses that aren't currently allowed. So the goals of the update are listed here on this slide. They include connectivity planning, the 185th overlay concept I mentioned, an updated environmental analysis and associated document like a supplemental environmental impact statement, updated plan to action area ordinances, updated sub-area plans themselves, and implementing development code provisions to get the vision that the plans have for that walkable and connected community. So this slide outlines the project schedule and timing. Starting next year, we're focusing on public engagement, particularly around this connectivity piece and the 185th overlay concept. Next spring and summer, we're developing the draft and final supplemental EISs. And next fall and winter, we'll bring the plan and code proposals to the Planning Commission and eventually City Council. So here are the anticipated next Planning Commission meetings. Next one is in March. We may come back earlier than that, but for sure we'll be back in March to share the engagements of our public engagement process, share the results of our public engagement process and the final concepts for the connectivity locations and types. And then in June, we'll get some early input on the sub-area plan edits and development code edits. In August, we'll come back for a discussion of a refined plan and code edits based on that June discussion. And in the fall, we anticipate a public hearing and that you'll make a recommendation to City Council on these items. All right. Thank you for bearing with me through that. So really what we're here for tonight is to get your input and feedback with the variety of experience and knowledge that you all bring to this. And so the questions are listed there, and just happy to take notes on any kind of feedback that the commission might want to provide.
Do we want to start with clarifying questions? Go ahead.
Okay. I couldn't completely comprehend this big picture. So we are trying to address a few. First, I think about this: what is the new allowable big umbrellas developable units with this update can cover? Is it covering the next 10 years? Or is it covering just for the, we are setting a higher developable unit allowed by this new update?
Yeah, we would look at increasing the threshold beyond, increasing the unit count and the jobs beyond what is currently in the planned action ordinances. The time frame, you know, I can come back to you with a more accurate information on that. I think there is a set limit on it. Last time we did 20 years, so we may do the same this time. We may set a lower time frame, but we're looking at the range of housing unit counts, and we're picking, it's similar to the first time around where for the environmental analysis, we looked at a range of how we could grow over time based on, you know, what we were going to allow, and we picked kind of a middle road of not the highest and not the lowest, but a middle road of what we anticipated would happen, and that's what we went with. Yeah. And so we'll come back with, we can come back with those details specifically. But yes, the idea would be to create a new pool of housing units, which if somebody comes in to apply for a permit, instead of having to do the CEPA review on a project-by-project basis, they could instead be evaluated against this environmental analysis we're doing as part of this update.
I see. And so what we are saying, this new plan to update, this update, or the study of this improvement in the connectivity will only affect the future permitting units. So we have no way of backtrack to improve what has already happened or permitted development.
So we've already permitted a lot of growth in the last 10 years. So right now, the permitted projects within each station area are shown on this slide. So we're pretty close to it in the 148th station. We've got about 400 units left in that pool. So basically one larger project or a few smaller projects coming in would use up that unit count. And then in the 185th station, we have about 800 units that are still left in that. Again, if we get a couple of large projects, multifamily housing projects that, so currently there is some growth capacity available, but it's not a lot given the growth that we've seen. We don't know how things are going to go in the future, but the idea would be to increase that number.
Thank you.
What's the relationship between the housing units that we talked about as part of the comprehensive plan and, like, that was a certain number of units? I know that was for the whole city, and the sub-area capacity pieces, like, I'm assuming there's a relationship, but can you talk about that a little bit?
So when we updated the comprehensive plan, it was as a city as a whole, our growth for the next 20 years. So certainly, you know, we have a couple of parts of the city where we anticipate most of our growth. I mean, the two station areas would be areas where we anticipate that. There may be a few other commercial and mixed use parts of the city, like Shoreline Place, maybe Ballinger area and parts of Aurora where we might expect a lot of growth, and then otherwise infill development all account for the overall numbers. If it's of interest, I can provide some information on what percentage of the growth in the next 20 years we anticipate to take place in the station. I don't have that right offhand, but I can provide that.
If it exists, that would be helpful. I think it's just sort of tying all these different numbers and pieces together so we can situate ourselves.
Yeah, I would just add, so to elaborate what Kate was saying, which is spot on, but we did, as part of that, the comp planning exercise, we basically took the 13,330 citywide target for housing, and as part of our traffic modeling and just overall planning, we distributed those to different growth areas throughout the city. So yeah, we could give you a percentage. I know we've got that breakdown, but yeah, it's really was focused on the light rail areas and then some of our other commercial areas, and then the balance was kind of distributed citywide.
Because I'm guessing that we have development capacity in the station areas. It's just not covered under the planned actions. Is that a correct assumption?
You mean undeveloped land? Yeah.
Building, we have the ability to develop more.
Yeah.
Just not under the current SEPA planned action situation.
Yeah, I mean, if you were to redevelop every property in the station area to the maximum amount, it would be, yeah, it would be
an incredible
amount of growth, but we're anticipating kind of a middle of the road scenario and the station areas being a part of the overall growth in the city. But these would be, you know, two activity centers in the city where we anticipate a lot of our growth to take place.
Okay. I like to state the obvious, but just to make sure I state the obvious. Other clarifying questions?
Yeah, I guess I have a question about, I think the lack of cohesion that you mentioned came up a lot from people's comments, the citizens' comments that we got during the comprehensive plan. But how far are we actually allowed to go within a sub-area plan in terms of actually coming up with what we want to see? Like, we have, you know, we noted a lack of alleys, but like if we're contemplating a whole neighborhood that over a 20 to 50 year period could be redeveloped, especially in terms of like around the station, there's a lot of assemblages. Can we actually start dictating we want an alley here? I know it encumbers people's personal property, which is a challenge in some ways, but.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly the reason that we need to do this planning effort is to look at what kinds of connections we want, where the connections make sense, and then having a clearly communicating that to the community, to property owners, to any developers that might come in. You know, it may not be that the connection is we're showing it to take place on this exact parcel, but it may be we want a connection generally in this area and we want this type of connection, and here's how we're going to get it. Either we're relying on you know, developers as they come in to basically build their half of the improvement, or the city is prioritizing these in some sort of capital improvement project and or some other creative funding that's maybe a private-public partnership. That it's early to talk about what that will be, but yeah, that is what we want to do. We want to clearly communicate, like, here are the rules of the game, and this is how we get to the vision that we want. And it's not a surprise to anybody when they come in to build a project that they might be expected to provide a connection.
Yeah, I would just add to the outcome we're striving for. The ideal outcome would be within the plan, we would have a map that would identify future connections and then connection type. So we would have clarity in terms of here's where we want the connections, here's what the connection should look like, as Kate spoke to, and then that map would not only be incorporated into the plan, but also adopted into the development code so that we have the implementation tool. Currently we have, you know, the connectivity in general is a gap in the original plans. I think it was probably intended to come back and do that as future work. Unfortunately, it's been 10 years already, nothing was ever codified. And so I think we've been a little behind the eight ball. There's been some missed opportunity, but there's still, as you know, tons of opportunity in both of these areas. So.
Okay. Go ahead.
I think in a couple of meetings ago, we had like a presentation that a lot of these large scale projects were basically stopping or not kind of continuing to develop, and we're seeing more like townhomes and kind of smaller scale stuff. Is that also kind of happening in these areas that we're seeing, where developers are kind of preferring smaller numbers of housing units than in the past and than we anticipate?
Yeah, I mean, I can speak to what I've seen in my time with the city. You know, in 2016, when the development regulations were adopted, the rezones took place for both station areas. initially in 2017, we started to see small townhouse developments come in, kind of single mid-block lots. And then we really started to see a lot of those take place 2017 to like 2020. And then in 2020, we updated our townhouse design standards. The pandemic happened. So there was a bit of a pause in what we, the types of development that we saw. It took developers a while to assemble several lots to come back in with townhouse projects that met the new design standards. And then in 2021, we started to see a huge influx of multifamily permits in the station area. So from 2021 to about 2023, we saw a lot of multifamily permits, and that started to taper off in last year and has continued to taper a bit. And then also in that same time period where multifamily projects started, had like their big boom and then started to taper off, we've seen, I think, a steady rise in townhouse permits. Like, designers have figured out the new code and what kind of lots and properties might work for what those regulations are. So those have been steady. So I would say we're seeing maybe 2 to 4 multifamily permits within a year, within the last couple of years. Some of those are outside the station areas, so you know, maybe we're getting maybe 1 or 2 within the station areas, whereas we were getting, you know, maybe like 3 to 4 in a year. That's just, you know, I don't know what numbers you saw. That's just kind of my, yeah, speaking to my experience.
I think Nate was talking about the sort of financing impact of multifamily sort of like, it was here and now we're seeing it here because of all of the things that are happening in the environment.
Yeah, I do have a, we have pre-application meetings with applicants where they come in and do their due diligence on projects. And then sometimes we see those come back in. So I have had a few applicants that I've had those meetings with that have been working on their proposals over the last year and are seem to be pretty close to submitting them, but they're smaller projects, I would say in the like 40 to 70 unit range rather than the 2 to 500 unit right. range. On this slide with the 148th constructed units, it's listing 683, but we're probably a month or so away from the Shea properties multifamily project getting finaled, and that's about 550 units. So that number will almost double with that project being finaled. So, but this is just where we're at right now.
I'm assuming that we're not seeing people develop under capacity of where we're at zoning. We're just seeing different, we're seeing different types show up in different locations. Sort of this slow, the slowdown, I'm air quoting the slowdown, but the idea that we're not seeing somebody, they were developing multifamily and now they're coming in with townhomes on that same lot.
You know, I mean, I can't speak across the board. Generally, we're seeing projects meet, we have minimum densities in mm-hmm. the station areas. So we're definitely seeing okay. every project meeting the minimum density. I know there are some properties in the MUR 70 zone, which wants our most intense form of development. So it wants stacked housing and apartments. Mm-hmm. I've seen some interest from developers in townhouses, but townhouses are not an allowed use in that zone. And so perhaps if it was allowed, we might be seeing some of that change. But yeah, I think for now, we're not seeing that too much. MUR 35 and 45 that allows townhouses and multifamily, we've mostly seen townhouses. We've seen a couple of small apartment buildings.
Okay, that's helpful. Other questions? I'm looking at you. Can you go back to your question slide just so we know that what we're focused on?
Actually, I do have another question. Sorry. So we get a lot of information about kind of the housing units, but we also have the jobs kind of numbers. Do you have any update on that as far as, like, I know you might not be able to, like, get actual job numbers just from, like, permits or whatever, but you can kind of get an idea of commercial or retail development or anything like that going on in the station areas?
Yeah, we still have plenty of capacity for the jobs that were contemplated by the environmental analysis. We do track them. So part of the planned action areas is we as staff, we track all of the units, housing units and jobs that we anticipate coming in with the permits. And we right now it's basically a flat calculation based on the square footage of commercial space. So we do, I can get you the exact numbers, but most of the development we've had has been like 2,000, 3,000 square feet ground floor commercial, which isn't producing a lot of jobs, but some.
Thanks.
All right. Anyone for ideas for consideration as we engage with the community? Filling space because I don't have an idea. I don't. Go.
I mean, I guess it's more of a question again about like the level of granularity we want to get to. Like, if you think of, I think some of the station areas, like they feel pretty akin to like the city of Bothell, where they just redid that. But I know that was a lot of civic owned land, but they were very prescribed in what part of land they wanted and what they wanted on it. Are we allowed to contemplate that level of granularity? And should we find a way to get that kind of information? I mean, it's starting to limit people's property use again, I know, but like, I feel like the lack of cohesion is because we have such a weird assemblage of lots and discontinuous roads and without stronger ideas of what we want. Like around 185th, it seems like there's a lot of hopes around the school to do it, but that's municipally owned land that may or may not ever, you know, it's,
yeah, I mean, right now what we're studying and the issues we're looking at is the connectivity piece, and then the land use overlay piece in 185th. So we're not looking at like a public acquisition or, you know, that sort of thing. I don't know what will come out of the planning process. Maybe there'll be something where we prioritize certain connection types, and maybe the land left over once you provide those connections might lend themselves to like a park acquisition or something like that. I'm just thinking of areas where you might have like a large utility corridor running through, and if a connection has to be provided and you're not left with a lot of land for development, maybe it makes sense for the city to acquire that and do something with it. But I mean, that it's a little broader than the scope we have right now. Something to keep in mind. But yeah, I don't think we're approaching it like a civic space or a public square type plan.
Yeah, I think I was thinking more like we hear a lot of things about people wanting, like the notions of that was like a hotel, but like should we actually look beyond the civic land and say like we actually don't want an apartment like around here, mm-hmm. because like with like a lot of the comments during comprehensive plan, at least like there's not a grocery store, but like in the spaces that are constructed now, you can't fit a grocery store in floor to floor height that's, you know, 12 feet or 14 feet, and so do we actually need to be more specific in that plan as to like we actually think this is the place it should go. And limit uses. I don't know how.
Yeah, it's an idea that's been kicked around. Yeah, it's like particularly around non-residential uses. Like, are there areas within the sub-areas that you would want to focus or allow only commercial? I mean, to Kate's point, you know, as we've been launching into this work, really the scope has been more about improving the transportation component of it, and not necessarily like wanting to reopen all of the land use discussion and development standards and everything that come along with that. I would say though, as you all begin to get into the study of everything, you know, that's within your purview to, if you think it's appropriate to maybe look at restricting some uses in a certain area or along like a key corridor or something, could definitely look at that. Again, I would probably recommend keeping the scope somewhat limited and not like blowing open the whole development code on that, like blowing the lid off the thing.
You got an affirmation. Yeah.
A couple of years ago, we posed that question. This was sort of the beginning of the ground floor commercial discussion we had with you guys. And we had this discussion with the city council. Should we be limiting or prohibiting residential uses in certain areas? And at that point in time, their inclination was no. But again, you know, you guys are a separate body, so you can be making your recommendation and forwarding that to council, and things change too, right? So I think, yeah. So I don't want to limit you. I want to put some guardrails on you, though, if I'm being honest.
One thought that occurred to me that is related to the connectivity is, and I'm most familiar with the 185th station, the parking lot is full at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I think we're starting to see people park in the neighborhoods, and you know, that is what it is, right? And I know that we've been talking about parking enforcement, et cetera, but I think that is directly related to this conversation about connectivity within the, I don't know why I'm looking at you, Carla. Like, I think this is directly related to this conversation, because it's a little bit of like, it is easy to park in the neighborhood and walk to the station area. Of course, the neighborhood doesn't necessarily love that, even though it is parking on the street, which is right of way. So just sort of thinking through that when we're doing some public engagement, I think would be a really good forward-looking sort of proactive way to address some tension there. Go ahead, Michelle.
I just think if we have a way to more targeted reaching out to those parcels that has been developed, or especially greater units, I don't know how, because their experience in living in that current the sub-area planning area would really help improving the future 20 years. I understand in Seattle there are more of the kind of a, say, in a neighborhood, in a bar, that becomes a neighborhood hub, that it becomes, there are a neighborhood group or people who would form, but it's more like grassroots. It formed from, it's not because of city direct. So I do not know how that is going to happen. It's just a thought that, okay, if we are able to reach out to the residents that's already in the area, that may be helpful. And in hope that as our neighborhood mature, the community would just form this type of, you know, liaison, or people who were representing a group of residents in the area, that we can just reach out to those, points to reach out even further. Oh, and I do have another one. It's unrelated to the community outreach. I look at the map of, I don't want to forget, I look at the map of the bike connectivity. I know we have a plan to improve 175th. However, until that happens, I don't see that as a bike connectivity area. I can bike to 185th. I try it. I really want to experience if that is possible. And it is. It is in current condition, 185th is already friendly enough for a not very skilled biker like me. But 175th, no. Totally no. It's a very dangerous street. So in our map, we are already showing, we're showing that maybe is our future plan. I don't know. Is that also indicating current? One of the map that you provided.
Yeah, I'm just going to pull it up here. Yeah, and you're referencing one of the attachments to the staff report. So
right.
We've got, yeah, that's what I'm pulling up on my other screen here.
The reason I mentioned that the bike lane is the multi, it's related to the question three, that multimodal connectivity. Walking to the station from many neighborhoods is not as achievable because some are really far. However, if bike can improve the bike connection, the east-west connection, it will hugely improve people who can bike to the station and reduce the parking needs.
Yeah, I can clarify what the map is showing. We may have looked at capital improvement projects that were anticipated within a certain number of years and included those on here, but I can verify.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Chris, go.
I think just to be kind of tag on some issues, but like for the question number three, like priorities, I think for me you'd be like looking at things like alleys and true bike paths that are not on the major road. Like actually allocating dedicated bike things, because I think that would take one, it would take care of bikes. It would also help with the line bikes. But also, if you look at those kind of things, like alleys take care of not only not long through blocks where the parking is at the street and you have to drive all the way in, like with the townhomes, like you take care of traffic problem, a parking problem, a trash problem. Because if you've ever driven down Dayton when they're picking up trash and you're just stuck for 2 miles behind a garbage truck, like. I think those things are the things I should focus on that tackle two or three options.
Yeah, I agree. I think the alleyway is a good priority just for being able to get the trash trucks off the right of way. I think it just provides the most advantage of those different multimodal connectivities. Also the map, I think, is a wonderful idea because I think that, again, the most important thing for developers is predictability. And just the more people know what is going to be expected of them coming in, it's just easier for people to pull the trigger and actually develop the things that we want developed.
Yep.
Okay. I like the idea of the alleyways, but I'm like, how do you plan for it? Do you like say in this area, if you build something, you need to have basically build an alleyway, and as once everything's all built, then you've got a nice alleyway that you can use? Or do you convert an existing right-of-way to an alleyway? I'm not quite sure how we would get to that point, but I'm also like not an expert, so do you have any insight on maybe that side of things?
Yeah, we can. I mean, that will definitely be part of what we look at is where do connections make sense? Like, where are people trying to get to and from, and where to make those connections, and then what connection type? So there'll be like a typology of, is it just pedestrians? Is it accommodating pedestrians and cyclists? Is it accommodating motorists as well? And if so, like, what does that street or what does that alleyway or street look like? How does it make it comfortable and safe for all of the users? So that's part of what we'll be looking at for sure. But it helps to get all of this feedback and to know, you know, that we're interested in, you know, the alleyway type in particular, and dedicated bike lanes to make things safer for folks that can, you know, I'm not a very confident bike rider, so I like the interurban trail for that reason. So I totally get it.
Absolutely. Okay, so you've gotten what you need from us? Does anybody have any final comments? Excellent, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will look forward to seeing you a lot next year.
Sounds like it, thank you.
All right, do we have any unfinished business? We never do. Do we have any new business? Still no. Do we have any reports and announcements? Andrew, you're going to let me down? Can you tell us our agenda for our next meeting, December 18th?
Yeah, so we're recommending the commission cancel the December 18th meeting and then cancel the January 1st meeting for obvious reasons for the holiday. And then the next meeting would be January 15th, would be discussing the 2026 comprehensive plan docket amendments.
No.
It's like Groundhog Day.
All right. So, taking your recommendation, do we have any objections to canceling December 18th and January 1st? They are canceled. And we will see you for the 2026 Comprehensive Plan docket on January 15th. And we adjourned. Thank you.